Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Don't ask me what happened to that set, but I gotta take a look at it. Something's messed up. So with that, let's go.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of May, Anno Domini, 2013. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. And we will start with the news. And you know what? It now actually takes longer. Here we go. Finally. Yes, thank you. I know. It now takes longer, and it still isn't started to start a hangout. It takes more time now to start a hangout than it used to. I used to be able to start a hangout just at about the time that you were doing the thing. Now, it takes even longer. Thank you, Google, for making everything take longer in Google Plus and to start a Google Hangout. Thank you. I can't begin to tell you how excited that makes me. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yeah.
Beg your pardon.
Just a little.
Just a little. Okay. Then let's go to the news and start with the news of the week. A majority of consumers and small businesses, Windows PC users, Windows 8 users, launch fewer than one Metro app a day, signaling they're spending most of their time on the classic Windows 7 type desktop, according to data released this week. Just 39% of owners of desktop PCs powered by Windows 8 launch a Metro more than once a day. Laptop users fire up a Metro app slightly more often, with 40% opening an average of more than one app daily. Even touch-enabled notebooks infrequently access Metro. 42% of the owners of those devices launch more than one app a day. Only tablets tilt toward app use. About 56% of Windows 8 tablet users open an average of one or more apps daily. The app launch, and that's in Metro. What they're clearly doing is going over to the real desktop and doing stuff there. Only tablets tilt toward app use. About 56% of Windows 8 tablet users open an average of one or more apps daily. The app launch rates were calculated using a pool of about 10,800 Windows 8 devices, PC desktops and notebooks, touch-ready laptops, tablets. The 10,800 PCs do not include any enterprise systems, but very significant amounts of consumer and small business PCs. The numbers for traditional PCs, especially touch-enabled notebooks, must give Windows, Microsoft Windows executives heartburn. They have repeatedly pinned hopes for a boost to PC sales on touch, blamed the paucity of touch laptops for the sluggish launch of the OS last year, and pointed to later this year when more touchscreen PCs will be available and at lower prices as a reason for optimism. On average, a Windows 8 user launches 1.5 apps a day for a week's total of 10.5 apps. Not surprisingly, tablet owners open an above average number, 2.7 apps daily, or about 19 apps a week. Just as expected, desktop, laptop, touchscreen owners launch fewer apps on average. Those with desktop Windows 8 PCs open an average of 1.4 apps a day. The basic behavior is to just jump to the desktop, said one of the people who put the study together. People don't find Metro intuitive. That's been the dig against Windows 8 from the start. It's all that hidden knowledge. Even before Microsoft officially released the upgrade last October, critics slammed Windows 8 radical move to a touch-first interface. You see, shipments have contracted for four straight quarters, most recently by 14% in the first quarter of 2013, and some have blamed Windows 8 for contributing to that decline. I should have written dropped instead of contracted. The data don't measure actual app usage, as in, for instance, the percentage of time during the day that the user works with a Metro app, but only the number of times it's launched. Windows 8 users can, of course, open an app once, leave that app open throughout the day, returning to it several times, for example, to check email. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 8 users snub Metro apps. And the choices are, I love Metro. I hate Metro. I will never even try Metro. Right now, we have 33 votes recorded. And of course, I know you'll have a lot more to say, including the fact that I don't have enough choices in the poll. And therefore, if you slide down that page a little bit in the same column, you'll see recent forum topics. Right now, the top one is about this poll, 25 May 13, Windows 8 users snub Metro apps, where you can leave your comment, as quite a number of you have already done. You can do that. You can join us. You can get together with us. You can give us a call. You can listen live online at jazz901.org. There's a link right on our the Soundbites homepage over on the far right under the Call Us section. I got that done, but I didn't get the other thing done. The
live link?
Live link. No. I got the live link done. What I didn't get done, that's him. It's his Nook.
I was wondering. Yeah. Wait a minute. Did I push a button?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not you. The iTunes link. Ah. I didn't get that done this week. It's on my list. I just didn't get to it this week.
Slacker.
Exactly. I was a slacker this week. I spent much of yesterday with my daughter instead of doing all the other things I should have been doing. And that's just the way it is. So get over it. I don't care. Clearly, I don't care. So then you can give us a call. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Your hangout is public, right?
Yes, and you're invited, in point of fact.
Well, I'm on my wife's. And see, I got to come up with the name of it. It's not a Nook anymore. It's an Android.
Right.
It's a jelly tablet. So
it's an Andruk.
Andruk. An Andruk jelly tablet.
Annoyed.
Annoyed, yeah.
Jailbroke.
I put Jelly Bean on my wife's Nook. So you have to invite her.
Oh, I think I can do that. I don't know. Let's find out. I don't like, I will
say, if I go to G Plus, I can view the Hangout on YouTube.
Yes.
But I can't join the Hangout.
Right, right. I will say that this is actually much, much harder to do. It took me last week. I couldn't even find the start a Hangout on air link. This week I found it and started it, and then it buffered for like an hour before it actually started, and then it still didn't start. Then it had to wait and wait and wait before I finally got the start broadcast button, which I have clicked. So it's just there's a certain amount of annoyance here for me. And it's making me just a little crazier than I already am. Oh, I can invite people here. I won't ask you for it, but you'll tell me. Okay.
So that's interesting. So there's a G Plus app. So I've been playing with Android and finding all the apps that I'm used to on the iPad. And all the games that my wife was playing on the Nook OS, we're now re-downloading for the Android OS, which is it's kind of interesting to see how the differences have worked out and things like that.
So, yeah, and it's the Nook, which is a great little device. It seems fairly quick.
Yeah.
We'll see how quick it is on the Hangout, but it seems fairly quick. And it was you can either download the stuff and put it on your own 4 gig card, or buy a what's the minimum?
Eight gig. Well, the OS is like 4 gigs, so you want to have some storage space own apps.
Right,
yeah,
right,
so you can use as big a card as you want to have more storage space.
So you put it on an SD card, and then boot with that SD card in there. And then if you take the SD card out, you're back to being a Nook again.
Actually,
you don't lose anything.
There's a feature that when you reboot Android, it asks you if you want to boot back in the Nook. So you don't have to take the card out. Because I was a little afraid of that. Because those SD cards are tiny. It's a micro SD card.
Yeah, really, yeah. Really
so I was afraid of losing that.
That's nice. That's actually a pretty good deal right there. I think I've got an 8 gig card. I'll have to try that. You're going to put the link up to this particular version.
Yeah.
And then you found another version that was a little less
Yeah, they claimed
expensive.
To be a little cheaper. But the first one I had found longer ago.
Right. So Steve will put those up online. And, of course, we're waiting for your calls at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You know, we keep talking about the Metro interface. And it's not that there's anything wrong with it. It's actually not a bad interface at all, really. But yeah, you're right, assumes, Joe. Lash me with a wet noodle.
It assumes touch, and it assumes hidden knowledge.
It assumes touch, and it assumes hidden knowledge. And the problem really becomes the fact that, is this a rant coming on?
No, I'm going to be good today.
Good for you. It really assumes you have a touch tablet, and that's fine, except that now they want you to buy this touch tablet OS for your desktop.
Like you said, he assumes.
Yep.
And the first three letters of assume are?
There's an
you
A,
will be.
Yeah.
You will soon become.
That's right.
So I just sit back and laugh, you know, because folks will sit there and say, well, they can't, just like you said, they assume that I can do this and this. And I said, and you are now the first three letters of assume.
That's right. And that's a problem that Microsoft really doesn't seem to have a handle on.
Their whole group must have been in another world when they developed 8.
Yep.
Because it was clear. I mean,
as a touch tablet interface.
Yes, touch for tablet and for phones. It's great.
Right. But when you try to shoehorn that.
What? You have to mute each app separately?
Apparently.
Yeah, apparently you do.
Yes. Yes, and that becomes the issue. If I can't buy 7, well, if I can't buy a non-Metro interface, a standard desktop interface for my, standard desktop, that becomes a problem.
Right.
And I know that Microsoft would like to make their lives easier and just provide one product. But you know what? They've got a buck in the bank somewhere. They could hire an extra programmer or two to make my front-end desktop interface.
They could have alleviated so much agony for them. Because this is what they're doing. They're doing recovery again, just like they did with Windows ME and Windows Vista. Now they got 3 products. They're 3 for 3.
Yep.
Vista, ME, and now Windows 8. If they had come out like I originally said, give me the option to either see my old desktop or this new Metro. Let me, at my discretion, learn this new interface. Because it is not designed for a desktop. I'm sorry. I'm not leaning over my desk, sitting there swiping. I don't have a swipe screen. I got a mouse.
That's right.
And my tablet, it's okay. I don't mind doing it on my tablet.
And the problem with that type of working, you know, letting the customer decide which thing they want to do is that most customers won't learn the new stuff. They will keep using the stuff they already know because people hate change.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of the big reasons that Windows 8 is getting a lot of flack is people hate change. And it's a huge change.
No, I was going to say this was more than just change. Hello, this was a total paradigm shift from what everybody's been used to from Windows 3.1. Yeah. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden, you were into that OS that much. Hello, we've been into that OS and the look and feel since Windows 3.1, or 3.0, actually.
Right.
And I can even go back to Windows, if folks even remember, 286.
Yep.
Yeah. And before that was the Xerox Gem. The Xerox Gem products were very much like look and feel Windows. Because they had the folders and everything else. Because I learned that at Kodak. And so to do this total shift and, you know, make it so that you were going to use it like a tablet on your desktop, that just isn't going to happen because people aren't there yet. I mean, they're great for the tablets, and that's why I was saying what's the beauty of the tablets is I don't have to know that it's either a Mac or an Android. All I have to know is I go to the particular store, download the applets, and it runs. And Windows 8's good for that. I can put the applets on it that they want and control that. That's cool because I've got the swipe screens. Yep. Again, I don't need to know the operating system. But
Infinite Nick. Well, see, that, and that's what's interesting is when you're on the Android tablet, you go to the Google Play Store, and that's all the apps you get. You don't have to worry about what OS it's for. In the Mac world, we've been criticizing that for years. When you go into a store to buy software, almost everything is for Windows, and you can never find Mac software. And that's one of the reasons Apple started their Mac App Store. Is now in the Mac, there's a store built in where you can find Mac software.
Right, it was kind of group chat inception for a moment. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Nice. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
We still got to change some of this music.
Yeah,
it
I know.
It stinks.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have our friend Linda from Greece on the line. Hiya, Linda, what's up?
Hi, got a couple of questions for you. I know your website is not completely up. I realize that.
Right.
But I've got what they call Podcaster.
Right.
You know, the podcast?
Sure.
Okay. I tried putting in Soundbites. They don't even recognize your show.
Because the link hasn't been created yet. You need to go to the website, our website.
I tried the RSS feed.
You copy that link into your podcast program.
Huh? you're asking a novice. Okay. Even your RSS feed doesn't work.
It should.
No, I went into you. I went out on my laptop. And I went onto your website, and I clicked on RSS feed, and I got some, and I got, it says, something, I forgot what it said, but it didn't say it, I could get it.
You have to pick the RSS reader program that you want to read that with.
Now you're getting really technical.
What did you get when you clicked on RSS?
I don't remember what I got.
What you might get is a new web page with a bunch of what looks like gibberish in it.
No, I didn't even get that. I did this a couple of days ago, and I went on my laptop. I didn't even try it on my iPad. I went on my laptop, and it says, I forgot what it said, but it didn't take me to a page. This was about a week ago.
Now, did you click on RSS or did you click on iTunes?
I clicked on RSS. Because I had downloaded an RSS feeder, you know, a
right.
program to read that, and I couldn't get anything.
I don't know what you were seeing because Steve just did it and got what he needed. Now, is your laptop a Mac or a Windows?
It's a Windows 7.
Okay, then once you downloaded the Podcaster,
okay, I've got the Podcaster. Right here, right now. I've got Podcaster. Okay. It says click add. Okay, I want to add something. It says I can search by the name, add URL, import OPML.
Right. You want to do the add URL, and you want, well, before you do that, you need to go into our website and copy the URL from the podcast page.
And the way you do that is you go to the podcast page. You know where that is. And where it says RSS and pod and iTunes,
yeah.
You right click on RSS and you get a drop down menu.
Uh huh.
And you select copy the link location.
Okay.
Copy the link, whatever it's actually going to say. Copy the link.
Right. Okay.
Then you go to your podcast software, and of those three choices, you select the one that lets you enter a URL.
Okay.
Then in there, you do the paste, and from there, you should be fine.
Okay. Now, I got one more question for you. Registering for your forum, I put in all my old information, but I'll tell you, those pictures are driving me crazy. When it says, I am human.
Yeah, it's I have four circles you have to straighten to prove you're human and not a robot.
Yeah, I have tried for 3 weeks doing that, getting different pictures no matter what I do. On my laptop, no matter what I do, it says, I'm sorry, something is wrong. It's driving me up a freaking wall.
You have to get all four of them.
I did. I changed the pictures. You know, it says, you want a different picture? Yeah, okay. I got 20 different pictures, and I straightened them all up, and it keeps telling me I'm still wrong. That is driving me up a wall.
I don't know what to tell you. When you get them straight, I think they give you a little check mark or some such.
Yeah, it keeps telling me something is wrong. Okay, now maybe one more question. Okay, now when you register, do you have to register with something brand new?
Yes, the old usernames are gone. Well,
okay.
You can use the same username that you did on the old system, but it is a brand new account.
Okay, so I put in my email address, and I created a username. That was fine. That says, are you human? Yes. I did the pictures. I must have done 20 different pictures, and I straightened them out, and I'm still doing it wrong. I like the thing where it was letters and numbers. That was a lot easier.
That's also easier for the robots to guess, too.
I know. Well, I'm having a lot of problems getting in there because I've tried many different pictures, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, okay. So I thought, oh, I'm going to call these guys and ask and maybe find out what the heck am I doing wrong.
Well, it's just a matter of getting them actually oriented correctly. That's the whole point of that.
All four at the same time.
I know. That's what I'm doing. I'm pretty sure. You know, because I'm changing the pictures because some of the pictures, I don't even know what they are.
Well, that's a bit of a problem. If you can't figure out what it is, you can't figure out how to get it straight up and down. I understand that. And I'm sorry, I don't know what else to tell you about that. But the problem was, with the old way we did it, we had so many spam people.
Oh, I understand.
That, you know, this so far has kept the number of people who are spammers down to a bare minimum.
And I don't get those emails, duplicates and triple. I don't get any of that spam stuff anymore.
Right.
It's great.
So, yeah. But yeah, keep. I don't know what else to tell you except keep trying. It's a matter of knowing what the picture is and then getting it upright. And I
okay.
I can't.
Yeah, you know.
I don't know what
else
to tell you.
I said, well, I don't know if you guys know, but I've got a learning disability, and that is driving me crazy.
Right.
You know,
no, I get it.
That's why when you give me all these instructions, I'm going, okay, that's why I have to go back and listen to your podcast, because you're telling me this, and I'm going, okay, I got to go back to it. Were you having trouble with the May 11th podcast? Because I download everything else, but that's the one I cannot download.
It should be okay.
Steve's checking it right now, but we'll check that as well.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah,
maybe she is a robot and not human.
Yeah.
Could be.
No, I do understand that there is this tension between making it easy for people to get into the forum and not flooding the forum with spammers, and I do understand that it's a bit of a problem, and I'm not entirely sure how to make it easy for one and not easy for the other.
That's
so
interesting.
That's the way we're doing that right now, and I do hope you figure that out, Linda, because I know we'd love to have you in the forum.
So I just tried to register new on the tablet, and it says the spam catcher response is wrong. It's not displaying the spam catcher response. So whatever is that JavaScript, whatever that is, isn't available on.
Yeah, right. Won't do Java, right?
Yeah.
Right, so I don't know. I don't know what to say at this point. There's, it just is what it is in terms of the fact that these things are getting, the robots and the spammers are getting more and more sophisticated. So we unfortunately have to get more and more sophisticated to stop them. Otherwise, poor Dave was getting truly hundreds of these things every day, and so. We don't want that anymore. Dave's not even getting them. I'm getting them now. And there've been almost none. So I've been very pleased with that personally, frankly. But
on the average, I would get between 3,000 and 4,000
A day.
A day.
That was yes. 3,000 and 4,000 a day. Because one time I just had them go into this one bucket just to see. And like I say, it was, and I did that for a few days, just tallied it up. Yeah, easily. Because I got tired of, you know, constantly mixed up with all my...
No. It's not just getting the email. Then he's got to go in to the Soundbite software and remove all of those people. And,
yes.
Well, ain't nobody got time for that.
Well, that got too bloated.
Right. So now it's better, but now we're at the point of cutting people out we want in the forums. So.
The latest sneaky thing, because I've run into the same problems with the Cider forums, the latest sneaky thing is when they register, so real people are now creating these fake accounts. When they register, they put their spam message in their registration information. So if City says, buy my product, things like that. And the latest thing they're doing is they're... reporting spam. So on a post, there's a report spam button. They are reporting spam and putting their spam in their report.
What is the point of that?
Someone has to read the spam message to mark it as spam. So now I get emails. Someone has reported this message as spam. So we're going to have to turn off the spam report feature because there's too much spam in it. So
I'm sorry, but that's actually kind of funny.
The bad guys overwhelm any good technology.
Yep. All right, let me read a news item. Tim Cook did Steve Jobs proud at this week's congressional hearings into Apple's tax avoidance practices. During his testimony, Cook pulled a mind trick or two out of his eye pocket, rivaling even the late Jobs in his ability to weave reality distortion fields. The Senate report released prior to Cook's testimony detailed Apple's complex web of offshore entities set up to avoid paying taxes. Yet in his testimony before a Senate subcommittee, Apple's CEO defended the company, saying Apple uses no tax gimmicks. Please, long before the world was swooning over iPhones and iPads, Apple pioneered the accounting sleight of hand known as double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. Look it up. A New York Times in-depth report this week traced the ways Apple, starting in the 1980s, has acted to avoid paying taxes by routing profits through Irish subsidiaries and the Netherlands and then to the Caribbean. The subcommittee's report revealed that one of the Irish subsidiaries set up by Apple has paid no corporate income tax to any nation for the past 5 years, although it reported $30 billion in net income from 2009 to 2012. Another subsidiary has paid a tax rate to Ireland of 0.1% or less in 2009, 10, and 11, far below the normal Irish corporate income tax rate of 12%. Congressional staffers said Apple has negotiated an income tax rate of less than 2% with the Irish government, but in some cases avoids paying even that. Apple is hardly the only tech company employing tax avoidance techniques. Google has been investigated by the IRS for shifting profit into offshore subsidiaries, and Microsoft's strategy for reducing its tax bills has also come under scrutiny. But as in so many other areas, Apple scores big on style points. In the words of Senator Carl Levin, chairman of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, Apple successfully sought the holy grail of tax avoidance. Edward Kleinbard, law professor at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, and a former member, staff director at the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation, was more succinct, describing Apple's economic behavior as unbelievable chutzpah. Where Cook was absolutely factual in telling the subcommittees we pay all the taxes we owe, tax avoidance, unlike tax evasion, think Lindsay Lohan and Wesley Snipes, is perfectly legal. But that doesn't mean it's fair or even ethical. So, our question to you, is it smart to avoid taxes or is it anti-American? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
What's interesting is that Ireland has come out and said, it's not our fault you guys have taxes too high. You should fix your own taxes. We're not the problem.
Right.
And right. One of the things that has come out with, because I've read a lot about this also, Apple makes more money outside the U.S. than they do inside the U.S. because outside the U.S. is a lot bigger.
Right.
And their Irish operations center is handling all the European stuff. And so in America, they don't ship their profits overseas, but everything in Europe ends up going through Ireland. And so one of the things Cook had said is that Apple pays $1 out of every $40 of corporate taxes. So one company is paying 2% of all U.S. taxes, which is incredible, too.
Right.
They pay billions of dollars in taxes. And he,
they make billions of dollars. Right. Look, you can't look at it as... Doesn't Tim Cook understand the concept of ratios and percentages?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we were just talking during the break. There was actually somebody in the IRC chat who was also having problems with the CAPTCHA. I suppose a couple of people having trouble getting it to work is better than 70,000. Jack was also saying that there were 70,000 spammers registered on the old system. Even past the ones you caught every day, we had 70,000 spammers registered. Well, yes, and so, yeah. You know, now we don't have any spammers registered.
No, we don't.
So, although I still catch a few every day.
Yeah, now, because now it's real people
trying
spam,
to be creative and get it.
Well, and the way we solve that is you have to get your first message approved.
Mm-hmm.
Before you're allowed to spam.
No, we're trying to eliminate that. Right.
So when you do your first post, it must be approved. And then from then on, all your posts are okay.
Yeah, we're good.
So most spammers immediately enter spam.
As their first post.
So you catch them right away. And then if I catch them in the forums, which I haven't yet, but if I catch them in the forums... then I'll just remove them. Any one of the three of us can just delete them. And so that becomes easier for, I think, everyone. But it does mean that at the gate, that CAPTCHA is going to be a little tougher.
We have improved the process by 110% already.
Yeah, because it also makes the system respond a little quicker.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look through 70,000 names every time.
Which were junk.
Yeah. We had about...
And it was time to do it anyways because we've been doing this for 23 years.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of folks that have come and gone.
Yeah.
Like Black and Tan and a number of others.
I didn't want to lose them, but they are now mm-hmm. gone. And it is what
you
it
know,
is.
That brought me... to mind, you know, Lolly.
Oh, yeah, of course.
How long has she been gone now?
Quite a while.
You know, and it's like, wow. The only sad thing is, I still remember she was going to try to get up here one time. It was right about this time of year. It was right around Memorial Day. She had family up in this neck of the woods, and she was hoping to come up here and finally meet us.
Yep.
Because we said, well, then good, you got to come on the show. And she was going back and forth. Well, I don't know, you know, I'm shy on my eyes. Well, no, just to come up and meet you.
Right.
And she was a redhead.
Yeah.
For folks who don't know, I still have an obsession with redheads because my very first girlfriend, I still remember her name. Her name was Nancy Steinwatt.
Sure.
And she was a redhead. And I fell in love with redheads ever since then. Of course, both my wives have not been redheads. Oops.
Well, I have to be honest. I grew up in an entirely Italian neighborhood. I don't think I saw a girl who wasn't a brunette.
Yeah.
Until I was in my 20s.
I grew up for quite a while up on Jones Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was high Italian. I mean, I can remember my first job. I was maybe, 10, 11 years old, and we wound up, I was helping this guy make bleach. We'd make bleach down in his basement in this old washing machine. Then we'd fill up the bottles, and then I'd go around delivering bleach. And then we'd have dinner at his house, and this was so cool. He'd bring out the bottle of wine.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd sit there and have wine, and I'm thinking, oh? What I didn't realize, they had already called my parents. Right. And said, you know, and they said, yeah, go ahead. Just got to walk home. I mean, it's not like I was going to get plastered, but I came home and guess what I had? Yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know.
Like, darn! Took all the fun out of it.
My uncle, I will admit to the world that I spent much of my childhood plastered in the fall because my uncle made dandelion wine in the basement, and those fumes would come up through the house, and we were all happy all fall long. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, I can remember them getting the grapes in the big, crates.
Yep.
And hauling those downstairs, and they'd sit there and put them into the press.
Yep. Well, we had our own little grape arbor in the back. We made our own wine.
Yep.
And but my uncle would make dandelion wine, and I don't know how potent it was because I was young back then. But we were all pleasantly happy all the time. Not from drinking it,
no,
from smelling it.
Yeah.
Because the fumes would come up. Wow.
See, now my mother made sauerkraut in the basement.
Yeah, there you go. There's a problem right there.
And every few giant 5-gallon tubs, and every few days you have to go down and skim the scum off the top.
I don't want that job.
I don't eat sauerkraut. I don't want to smell sauerkraut.
That I can't stand. Well, there's that and cauliflower.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Those two vegetables.
Like, I like cauliflower more than I like broccoli.
Oh, see, I love broccoli. I could do broccoli until the cows come.
That's not my favorite.
My mom also made grape juice, and every now and then one of the bottles would turn. Dill beans. We had dill pickles, but she also did dill beans. She's from old English
Oh, I like stock. Pickled.
And we had a pear tree, a cherry tree, and a peach tree in her backyard, and my mother would can peaches and pears forever, and we would eat the cherries. To this day, I have trouble eating cherries because we ate so many of them as a kid. We would sit up in the tree for hours in the summer with my friends and just eat cherries while we talked, and I don't think I ate a meal in the summer because we just filled up on cherries.
I just noticed coming up my driveway, I had to pick some stuff up in my garage. I looked down because I've got strawberry plants that go right from my garage all the way up to the bird feeder. And I looked down. No. Sure enough, I looked down in the there's my first strawberry.
Nice.
So I got strawberries already coming. I love that because I freeze them. And, you know, if I get enough, there's some years I've had enough that I have my daughter make strawberry jam. But it's just nice during the winter months to have a bunch of them frozen. Pull some out and have fresh strawberries and make up some biscuits, you know, the regular shortcake biscuits, and put fresh strawberries on them.
Yep. I personally can't do berries, but I know how wonderful they taste.
That my
well, listen,
my
give us a call at the gardening segment of Soundbites, 585-966.
No, it's not gardening. It's just plain food. We're hungry.
Yeah, right. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
The culinary corner.
Yeah, we used to do, we used to joke, we called it the apple pie machine. We'd go to a friend's house and get several dozen 20-ounce apples, the giant green ones.
Yeah.
And we'd make apple pies all afternoon. We'd make 200 or 300 pies in an afternoon.
Nice.
My mom and my sister made the crust, and Dad peeled the apples, and I got to run the Vegematic.
Nice.
And, and so, yeah, we'd make 200 pies and put them all in the freezer. We had one pie for apple, one freezer for apple pies. We had one freezer for the side of beef we always bought.
Sure.
Beef was ridiculously cheap when you buy it by the side.
Yep.
And so all winter long, we had good steaks and hot apple pie.
Nice. Nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
Nothing
going back to the old, talking about Italian neighborhood, I can remember, there was this one lady, Tony, I remember his name, Anthony. But Tony, we always called him, his mom would make the best sheet pizza.
Because
we'd be out maybe playing kick the can, if any of the kids remember that game. But she'd call us in, and she'd bring out this sheet pizza. It was huge, but oh, was it good.
Mrs. Vetrimel used to make sheet pizzas that were so thick you cut them with gardening, hedge trimmers. But it was delicious, delicious pizza. Very tasty stuff. Do we have enough time for this call? Yeah, all right. Larry from Webster. We may slide you over, Larry, but go ahead. Let's start.
Well, My grandmother used to make the best pizza. But anyway, I got a computer question. When I leave my computer running for about 15, 20 minutes, I'll come back to it, and my screensaver will be up, but none of the files will be showing. So what I have to do is then I'm going to shut it off and fire it back up again.
Now, what you need to do is you've got to go into the energy-saving parts of the Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Shut all that stuff down. Windows does not like energy saving. If you're worried about,
are you on a desktop or a laptop?
No, it's a desktop.
That you definitely want to turn off all.
Yeah, turn all that stuff off. And if you're worried about the monitor, just turn the monitor off.
There's also a difference in the setting between energy saving and a screen saving.
Yeah,
the energy saver tries to
power down the hard drive,
power down the computer, power down the monitor. And desktop computers don't like that very much.
Pain in the butt.
And most monitors have power saving built into them anyway. So when the video signal is goes away when the computer sleeps, monitor sleeps itself.
Yeah. I was just worried that I got a virus or something.
No.
The problem is that energy saving business. Laptops. And smaller, portable machines all have the right circuitry to take advantage of that. But desktops don't even have that circuitry. They're not designed to go into a low power mode. So when you try to put them in a low power mode, it just screws things up.
It does. Okay, guys, thanks.
Yep, our pleasure. Yeah, we find that
some desktops handle it better than others, but yes. Generally,
but none of them handle it well.
Yeah.
I mean, really well.
Yep, and that's been a shame because of all the wasted power that computers use. That some power plant is polluting the air to make for you.
Right.
I remember when I was back at Kodak, they were getting had signs all over trying to get people to turn off their monitors over the weekend. Just turn off the monitor over the weekend. That will save us $50,000 a year in electricity.
Wow.
So now most monitors have energy saver built in, so the monitor we switched to LCD monitors too. Computers are starting to get the energy saver features built in, so they use less power. But it seems to handle a little better on the Mac than it does in Windows. But right. Moving into that low power and then being able to jump back up to full power again. Oftentimes, it looks like your computer's frozen for 15 seconds or so,
right.
Because it has to restart everything that got suspended when mm-hmm. it went to low power.
Yep. We can at least get the question.
All right, Gerd. Gerd,
yes,
from
sir.
Rogers, what's up?
I hate to interrupt the food and wine show.
Well, then bring some up.
Yeah. I got a ThinkPad
laptop.
Right, laptop. And I had some problems with it. I called Lenovo. I have an extended warranty.
Right.
And they sent me an overnight box, send it down, they send it back, and they cleaned everything out. There was a long story before that. My question is, what should I have on there? I've got the Revo uninstaller. I'm using Microsoft Security Essentials, Google Chrome, that kind of stuff.
That's a good start. As it turns out...
Well, I'll hold on until your break is done.
Oh, all right. That's a problem.
I'm going to hang up.
Oh, all right.
All right.
Okay?
Yep. Thanks, Gerd.
Bye-bye.
But I will tell you that most of what you've talked about... Yeah. Most of what you've talked about is good. Microsoft Security Essentials, not so good. Used to be when it first came out, it was excellent, but mm-hmm.
they tend to leapfrog each
worse.
Other.
Yeah, constantly.
Right now, Avast, AVG are excellent. If you want to pay for one, then certainly Kaspersky and a couple of the others are very good.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pick any one of those, but right now, at least, Microsoft Security Essentials is well behind the curve in terms of what it picks up. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend that one right now. But as far as everything else goes, Revo uninstaller should always be the first thing you put on your computer, followed by a good antivirus program, followed by a good Do the whole Security Tango stuff. I mean, you don't have to run the Tango if it's a brand new machine, but you should put all that software on it. You'll have a malware searcher. You'll have a firewall. You'll have all the stuff that you need to keep your machine as safe as it goes. So that's where I would start with that. Make that a priority for when you're doing when you're setting up a new machine. In fact, if you're setting up a new machine, make that part of your site book. You all do create site books, right? Because you should. I know nobody ever does, but.
And when we tech guys go in and ask them for their site book and their configurations and their passwords,
yeah, but
they,
do you have
look
a site
blank.
Book for your computers? No.
I do, because in the computer, though.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back for a whole nother hour of this nonsense, where we'll be talking about food, wine, and maybe even computers with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We continue to be the longest-running computer and Epicurean show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we had Gerd requesting us to tell y'all what a site book
actually
is.
To explain, Lucy.
A site book is something that a computer professional puts together when he or she creates a new machine. It has all the information you would need to recreate that machine. For example, what version of an operating system you put on it, what additional software you put on it, how you configured various things, everything, all the passwords you would need, everything you would need, and if that machine died, in order to completely recreate it. The reason that you do that is because, you know, we all think, every one of us thinks that the rules don't apply to us and that we could recreate a machine easily because we just made it. We'll remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't, particularly when we're under the gun. And so whenever I put a machine together at work, I create a site book so that if that machine dies, I can recreate it quickly, easily, and with minimum fuss. Even though all of our machines are now virtual and I have snapshots of all of them, I still keep site books because what happens if the entire virtual environment goes down and we have to recreate an entire virtual environment somewhere else? So I try to make sure that I have site books for everything, and I've carried that over to my personal machine. So when I've had a machine that died, I could bring it up again in about 10 or 15 minutes with every single thing that I needed on it. Done and ready to go. So that was really kind of nice. And that's what a site book is for. It's the first time you make one, the first couple of times you make one, you think, holy moly, that's ridiculously tedious. But the reality is that once you've done it, you're ready to do it again at a moment's notice.
And once you've needed it, you realize how important that
is. Yeah, once you've needed it, you know what you can do with it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roy. Roy from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're good.
I guess it's afternoon. But,
yeah, and we're
anyway,
not gentlemen.
Yeah, I was going to say, and he called us gentlemen. That's something.
My question relates to Outlook. It seems to me that there was some way in Outlook where you could look at a message and find out that the routing that message took to get to your PC.
Yeah.
Long headers.
Well, I'm looking at, I'm in.
If you look at a message.
Yes.
And go up to the view menu, you should be able to select full headers.
Well, I see headers, but I don't see anything that says full headers.
Well, is headers a menu, and does it give you short, long, full, any options under headers?
Yeah, is there an arrow to the side that lets you pull down and out?
Well, I'm looking at a specific message.
Yeah, it may be out at the main thing, not inside, because by then you've already opened the message.
So, well, I'm looking at the main thing now.
Yeah. Are you online
or
your view? Headers.
Well, I don't even see headers.
What version of Outlook are you in?
2007.
2007. All right. In 2007, there's an expansion button in the lower right-hand corner of the tags toolbar.
Wait a minute. Tags?
Yeah.
Tags.
And there should
tags,
be
T-A-G-S.
Yeah.
And there should be a box labeled Options, and then a section labeled Internet Headers.
I'm looking for the Tags tab.
Well, you may not see that, so you may have to go under View
and show the tags to begin with.
Gee. Right, or view toolbars.
Oh, view toolbars? Yeah, I can view toolbars. It says standard, advanced, web, or customize.
And on your toolbar, do you have an icon that shows tags?
No, not that I can identify, no.
When I used Outlook, it looked kind of like a price tag.
I don't see that.
All right. At the end of your toolbar, do you have an arrow pointing, I think, down?
Yes. It says add or remove buttons.
Yeah, you may have to add that button.
Okay. It says standard and customize. Let's see. I don't see
it. It's been a long time since I've used Outlook 2007, frankly. Possibly 5 years. So, 4 anyway.
I'm trying to find a picture of the toolbar.
That.
And you're in the Outlook app, not the Outlook website, right?
I beg your pardon?
You're in the Outlook app, not the Outlook.com website?
Yes, the Outlook app, yeah.
Yeah, you can't get 2007 on the web. There is a way to do it, and you do it by viewing full headers, but how you get to those, I'm much more familiar with 2010 than I am with 2007. So you're going to have to give us a minute to figure that out.
Okay. Here's one that says go to the Message tab in the Options group and click the Dialog Box Launcher.
Okay, hold on.
You have to know what all that means, too.
Right. Well, but Steve will post that, and that should give you some idea of how to do that. But you're right. If you want to know where a message came from, there's a whole science to knowing how to read the message headers.
Mm-hmm.
You read them from the bottom up and figuring out who's sending what to whom from where. Generally speaking, you should have the ability to figure that out backwards and figure out where it came from. You start at the bottom and work your way up to yourself.
Yeah, well, I can view headers, but I don't get the headers that come up are just the from, to, and subject and that kind of thing.
Yeah, need the long header or full header, whatever syntax it uses.
Yeah, I used to be able to do that, I think, in 2003.
Right. You still can. You just have to figure out where they. It's Microsoft, so they move everything around for every upgrade.
It may be called Internet Headers. In the Message Options dialog box,
okay,
choose Internet Headers.
I'm in the main Outlook menu, right?
It says open a message.
Oh, open a message. Yeah. Okay, I'll open a message. Got it.
On the Messages tab. In the Options group, click the Dialog Box Launcher.
Okay, I got to find the Options group.
Yeah.
Because I got this.
Oh, this is the ribbon now, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the ribbon.
No, that's why you can't find anything.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I don't.
There should be something that says Message Options and Internet Headers. And that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I don't. Well, here's Options. Okay, I can click Options, Message
And you
options.
Should see Internet Headers.
Wait a minute. Message Settings, Tracking Options, Request Delivery, Request Read Receipt. Delivery Options.
You're looking for Message Options. Outlook 2010.
Okay,
it's in a different place.
Okay, here's internet headers. Is that what I'm looking for?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Let me look at that. Okay, it's okay. It seems to have all the stuff in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it kind of does.
Okay.
All right.
Let's see. Let me back up here a minute now.
Now, whether that helps you find where it really came from is you have to understand how to read all that gibberish.
Yeah, right. I understand that, yeah. Okay, I think I can figure that out.
All right, excellent.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Roy.
I remember seeing one of the TV news magazines was trying to track down spam, and they picked this message that a woman got and went through the headers and actually tried to find the guy that hit the send button at the other end. And it was a little disingenuous, because they had we had to go to Canada, and we went to this company called Two Cows.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're a well-known, reputable company, and because they were the domain registrar, and then they eventually did find the guy that hit the send button to send the spam. Why'd you do it? I got paid a lot of money.
Yep.
But it was really disgusting spam. I got paid a lot of money.
Well, and that's just it. Spam pays well now, and so there you are. All right, our next caller is Dave from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. I don't have a problem. I just want to get your opinion. Maybe it's been asked before, but I'd like to find out what you guys think about the solid-state hard drives.
We wish they were cheaper so we could afford them.
Yeah, well, that's...
There are a couple of things you need to know about SSDs, solid-state drives. They're ridiculously fast compared to hard drives, still much slower than regular memory. But they're still ridiculously fast compared to regular hard drives. However, they are also much, how do I best put this? They die much sooner than regular hard drives. So if you expect a hard drive to last for 5 years, expect your SSD to last for two or three.
Yeah.
They've gotten better in that, not that the technology has gotten better, but now they actually give you a lot more space than they tell you they give you, and use that extra space to keep extra copies of your data.
Yeah, writing data to an SSD is destructive. It damages the memory cell to write data.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're mostly reading data, it lasts quite a while. So a lot of people put their operating system on an SSD, and then it loads super fast. And then they keep all their data on a regular hard drive, which if it takes an extra second to save that, you don't care anyway.
Yeah, no big deal.
But also it means that you don't, because you do so much writing to the data portion of your hard drive, you're not damaging the SSD. And they do last a lot. You need regular and really, really good backups if you're going to use SSD cards for your data.
One of the things we've seen is the prices have been dropping. Reasonable SSDs are about $1 a gig. But hard drives are, what, a penny?
Right.
A penny a gig.
it's kind of ridiculous. You know, you just get a whole terabyte and you can get a 3.5-inch drive and back everything up to that.
So a standard a terabyte spinning hard drive is what, $100? A terabyte SSD drive is close to $1,000.
But one of the other things I was telling a customer just this past week, again, you know, it's great. They were backing it up. They're backing it up to the cloud, and that's all good. But some of these photos that they had, they were priceless to the person.
I said, never put photos on an SSD.
So what I told them to do is, I says, if you really want to do yourself a favor and it's going to last a long time, is you go out and get the Kodak Gold DVDs.
KMP.
KMP.
Kodak Media Product, yeah.
And burn them to that.
Yep.
They have a great shelf life.
Guaranteed 100 years.
And you can tuck them away in a safe. That way, if anything happens... You can still get a DVD drive. Even Blu-ray will still read DVDs, and all the technology is still, you know, around for that. But although I can see that going away, and I hope it doesn't, but...
Yeah, I can too, and I get that. However, if you buy an SSD card, and you wouldn't do this with an SSD card. You would do this with a thumb drive of some sort, a flash drive of some sort. But if you buy a flash drive, write to it once and stick it in a safe,
pretty
good. But SSD cards are designed to be used as a replacement hard drive. And you need to know they don't last nearly as long as a hard drive. That's right. That's simple statistics. We've seen it over the past few years. That's simply a fact of life. People can argue it all they want. The reality is that the statistics say they don't last as long.
So does that answer your question?
All right. That's you've been very informative. I appreciate it.
Not the answer you wanted to hear, though, was it?
Not really, but on the other hand, I am eating pizza right now.
Doggone you!
Thank you.
Wait a minute. He's in Greece.
So are we.
Yeah, just come over to the side door. Ring the.
My wife is Chinese, so.
Well, just
it's all mixed up, and I'm from Canada
come over.
Originally.
Come over to the side door, ring the doorbell, and we'll answer it.
Yeah,
that'll happen. All right, thanks a lot.
So one of the things Apple has done lately, the industry has done mixed drives. So SSDs are fast, and spinning drives have huge capacity. So a couple of companies have put mixed drives where they put most hard drives like have like 16 megs of cache or 32 megs of cache. Where some sites are now hard drives are putting a gig of cache on the hard drive, so you have that speed and the spinning disk for capacity. And what Apple has done is they've created something they're calling the Fusion Drive, which is 128 gig SSD in a sort of a JBOD RAID with a spinning Winchester disk, and the operating system fits on the SSD. And watches your common files, puts the common files on the SSD so they load faster, but then you still have the hard drive, the spinning hard drive, for your huge storage amount. And it's kind of an interesting concept to have that mix there. So you get an SSD for speed and the spinning drive for capacity.
Yep. Yeah, we... That's the thing I said earlier, yep. too, is if you put your operating system on there and mostly read it, then it'll last longer. The drive inside, for example, my Chromebook is SSD, but it mostly just reads from it.
Yeah,
and so it'll last much longer, and that shouldn't be a problem. But in terms of the other, in terms of reading and writing regularly, is a bad idea.
Yeah,
it really is a bad idea.
They're electronics. Hello, when you're shoving everything into something that used to have moving parts, it's bound to fail.
So if you're one of those people who replaces your computer every couple of years, knock yourself out.
Yeah. Steve Gibson did a really good description of SSD technology a couple of Security Now episodes ago. You have to burn through the insulator in your cell to set the state, and that damages the bit a little bit. That's why you buy a 512. In fact, you get a 512 SSD, there's only like 450 available because the rest of it is slack, so they can overwrite when they need to.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Nick, you, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Carl all the way from Pottstown, PA, on the line. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have an old Dell computer. It has an operating system an operating system disk that came with it for reinstalling the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, use this CD to reinstall the operating system on a Dell computer. This CD is not for reinstallation of drivers.
Right,
I'm
right.
Wondering if I use this CD in order to get the computer back to its original condition, would it affect my drivers at all, or would it just leave them untouched?
All right, here's one thing you want to do before attempting that, and it's the same for anybody with a Dell.
There should be a second disk of drivers.
Yeah, there should be. Sometimes, but the safest way to do it is when they install it, you'll see two folders. There's either it's Dell.
On the hard drive now.
Right. Dell, and then there's drivers. Take both of those folders and copy them off to a flash drive. Because then you will have
this
the correct...
before you reinstall.
Right. Yeah. That way, because those are the drivers that they use. Because if you go to the Dell website, even if you put your tag ID in there, they'll come up with like six, say, recommendations for your network card. And they're all feasible because when they were building that model, there could have been revision A, B, C, D, and E. all within that time frame. So it might be this network card, this. So it's safe to take both of those folders and copy them off to a flash drive.
So the actual Dell Restore disk, the trick is whether...
You've got it.
Well, the trick...
Wait a minute. Do you have the radio on?
We're getting a weird echo.
Yeah.
Is it our end or your end? I had my screen muted. Did we lose him? So the trick is that some of those disks...
I don't hear Carl anymore.
Well, yeah, maybe we lost him.
Carl, are you still there? Nope, we lost Carl.
Something went weird. The trick with those restore disks is that most of them erase the hard drive and then restore the original specs.
Was it you?
No, I just looked down.
The phone's dead?
Major alarm?
Major alarm on the phone?
Major alarm.
Yeah, I'm getting...
Is this the private parts?
No, the phone system just went down.
Uh-oh.
And I'm getting... Because I had another caller there, and I'm getting a message here. It says major alarm, and nothing.
Go look outside and see if there's a fire somewhere, and perhaps we should leave the building.
Well, then the fire alarm would go off. This is an alarm that the phone system quit working.
Well, yeah, it seems to be.
Are we still on the air? Ask the Hangout guys. Are we still on the
air? Are we still broadcasting? Okay. Right. Excellent.
So, to finish answering Carl's question.
Richard says we're still broadcasting. That's what I like to hear. Thank you.
Most
Jack is hanging from the ceiling, as he so often does.
And then Dave just...
Half the people on our system are... It's just...
Yeah, no.
Me and Richard are the only faces here. Richard and I are the only faces.
No,
we're looking at whatever's hanging under Jack's desk, and Michael seems to have some sort of—I don't even know what that is. I don't think I want to know. Smiley's covered up his face with a penguin. Dolores just has a picture.
No, the whole phone system went down. I was just checking out in the office.
Nice.
No, there's something going on over at the school, obviously, with all the cars there. But wait a minute.
Is it rebooting?
Something's doing something.
Something's doing something.
Yeah, I'm getting red lights now, and
red lights are never good.
Yeah, red lights are not good.
Okay.
The system's back up, and let's see. Here we go.
All right, so we're getting calls again. Is that what's happening? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a call coming in. Yeah.
So to finish answering Carl's question, a lot of those restore disks will erase the hard drive and then reinstall the operating system as if it came fresh from the factory.
And you will lose any data you have on it.
You lose everything, right. And then there's a second disk that has all the drivers for that specific model computer.
Right.
And if you don't have the driver disk, it's hard to download the drivers because you need the driver first. So by saving that driver folder ahead of time, that really helps you when you're doing your reinstall. Sometimes the restore disk is an actual Windows reinstall that won't erase the hard drive. And so it often depends on the specific wording of the disk, if it's a reinstall disk or if it's a restore disk, as to whether it does. And then a lot of the PCs started they stopped including physical disks and made it a partition on the hard drive. So when your hard drive failed, you were screwed.
Yeah.
And then Apple started doing that a couple of years ago too, that the OS reinstall is a partition on the hard drive.
Yeah, because neither Microsoft nor Apple can afford
a disk. Well, Apple doesn't include disk drives on most of their computers now. So for a while, they included a flash drive that had the install on it. But what Apple has done, something neat now, they have something called Internet Recovery. You boot your computer over the Internet.
Yeah.
And then so it's like a net boot.
It's essentially a Pixie boot.
Yeah, a net boot from your own local network, but it's booting over the Internet from Apple's server.
Right.
And then it reinstalls the OS for your Mac.
Right.
So the biggest problem we see that was selling used computers is no one ever has their disks anymore. And so in order to erase the stuff on your computer, you typically need the disk to put the OS back on again. So now it's kind of nice that you, with this internet boot, you don't need to have that physical disk anymore. In fact, we got a call this week from a guy who bought a computer used on eBay, and the guy who sold it, there's still data on the computer.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And so was it a stolen computer when it got sold? Because most people, I would hope, when you sell your own computer, you would think about deleting your stuff.
You would certainly hope so. And you'd certainly think they would think about it, but so many don't.
But then we did have a guy who said he bought a computer at a police auction that had a firmware password on it. And could we reset it for him? Well, bring us your receipts and proof of purchase, and we'll have to figure out if it's really yours. And you did, well, I guess the police wouldn't bother erasing it. But if it was evidence, they would have tried to get in to use it for evidence.
Right, you would think.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga.
Oh, good one, Joe.
You're far more impatient than I am, Joe.
Oh, boy.
What can we do for you?
Well, you were saying earlier about Apple paying their taxes.
Yeah.
You know, what the heck? If they read the law and they say, okay, this is what we owe, and this is why we owe what we owe, I don't understand people's beefs.
Yeah.
Well, so it's like...
A lot of it is people themselves want to pay as little tax as they can, but somebody has to pay the tax.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work so well if we could all pay zero. Unworkable solution.
I heard somebody the other day, it was Roosevelt, right, during the New Deal that instituted income tax, and he was in his 60s, so he's not quite old enough to remember before then, but he was still blaming Roosevelt about income tax. Well, how else is the government going to run?
Right.
Well, you can be like Canada, and you can have 30% sales tax.
Our citizens any more than something like 1.5% of their income. Yeah, that changed really quickly, didn't it?
Well, and one of the things that Apple has been complaining about is they have $100 billion in offshore accounts that were earned out of the country, and the United States has a 40% tax to import that money into the U.S. And so a couple of months ago, Apple borrowed $17 billion to do an investor payback rather than the interest on that $17 billion is cheaper than the tax on bringing their money back in.
Right.
If I can interject just for 1 second. If some of you folks have been calling, and I had a few on hold, something's going on with the systems because it just rebooted again, and I lost it. I had 3 calls there. One person's called back. So if you do get all of a sudden dropped... let it be known that you got to try calling back because these systems are, it's going wonky. Now there goes the lights out again, but I still had the one call.
Is it an Avaya system by any chance?
No, we're not going there.
Well, no, it's just I've administered them and I've heard of major alarms. It might be something like a T1 card that's flaking out on you.
Yeah,
it could be. Something like that.
Yeah, it could be.
About SSDs.
Yeah,
I kind of like the SSD showdown, if you will, that they have on PC Perspective, PCPER.com/SSD-decoder.
Yeah,
that has a nice table that compares the various models out there with respect to access time. Multi-level cell versus single-level cell. The single-level cells will last longer since they only have to store a single level of electricity.
Right.
If you're willing to pay for the enterprise-class drives, you get several features including that.
Right.
And they're about half again more expensive.
Oh, yeah. That's it's a big problem. But me, I don't like to have to reinstall my system really often. Like once every 5 years or so would be good.
Sure.
So I'd be willing to buy one of those enterprise drives just so that they will last longer and be more reliable.
Yep.
Yeah, but longer and more reliable is still a relative term. Compared to hard drives, they're still not reliable, and they don't last any amount of time at all. They're just more reliable than multi-level SSDs and last longer than multi-level SSDs.
So I wonder if I should even bring up the specter that the drive that's sitting in my computer now, 8 years old, and has been on almost continuously during those 8 years. So it's still alive and kicking, I should say.
Yep. Well, and I've got machines like that myself. This particular machine that I have in here right now is about that old, and it's still alive and kicking as well. But I'll tell you what, if it was an SSD, it wouldn't be. And as a hard drive, we're all living on borrowed time.
Yeah, we had a customer this week came in, and she had a 14-year-old computer, and was upset that it died. And was more upset that nothing you buy today will work on her old computer because of the processor changes. And you know, she probably had, I forget now, she probably had like a 10 gig drive with 512, you know, mega RAM in a machine that old. And software that was 15, 14, you know, years old that now you got to buy new software too. So it's
talk to all those PowerPC chip Mac users.
That's what it was, yeah.
Right.
So it's frustrating that technology changes before you want it to, but if you wait too long, that ends up often making it more expensive to buy something new.
Right.
It's like it's a problem I always had when I was a kid with a car. We had an old junker car that every time it broke down, my dad wanted to sell it. Ah, it's a piece of junk, let's sell it. But we can't sell it because it's broke down. So we should fix it up, then we can sell it. But once it's fixed up, we might as well keep it.
Right.
Just put all that money into it.
Endless money sink is what it's known as.
Yep.
Same thing with houses, you know?
Yeah.
Yep, exactly right. All right, okay, thanks. All right.
Thank you very much.
I don't know. SSD cards, great idea. Very fast, but I would not trust my real data to them just yet. Maybe in another, 20 years, but certainly not now. They're a great idea. And like I said, I have one in my Chromebook. I had one in an old computer at work. An old laptop, I say old, about 3 years old, and it works fine. But it boots ridiculously fast. I do get that, but still not.
Turn your computer on, then get your cup of coffee.
Well, exactly.
That's what we used to joke about when people left their machines on all night because they didn't want to wait that five. You know, well, we always say 5 minutes, but that was never 5 minutes. Just then.
Stop it.
For their computer to boot.
Yep. It is with this dang thing, but that's another story entirely. I wouldn't. I love the idea of SSDs. They're really not ready for day to day use by the average public. They're really good. They're really good for, as we were saying, the booting side of things. But then, if you're going to save your data, save it to spinning hard drive.
Enterprise class 400 gigabyte drive. So it's probably a 512 with slack space. 400 gigabytes for $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Single level cell enterprise class.
Do they have a guarantee as to how long it's going to last?
Let's see if I can find that. Anyway.
I bet they don't.
They probably have a warranty. Seven-year warranty. That's actually pretty good.
That's awfully good.
But you still better have a really good backup.
Only $800 for 200 gig model.
Yep.
Honestly, those are the kind of prices we were seeing 20 years ago.
Yeah.
For regular hard drives.
I paid $1,500 for my 100 meg hard drive.
Yep.
And my buddy at the time decided to get 4 megs of RAM, $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 months later, we each bought the other one.
Yeah,
So we ended up on my Mac Plus. I had 4 megs of RAM and a 100 meg hard drive. And I was screaming.
Yes, I did.
In more ways than one.
Ain't that the truth? All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Fairport on the line. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing this afternoon?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, just dandy. Hey, I've got two related issues. Last year, I was able to tether my Nexus 7 to my Droid Razor for using on the Internet. This year, I can't even use Bluetooth to tie the two of them together, and when I click on the tether on the Droid Razor, it looks for my subscription, which never happened before.
The wireless carriers have discovered a new revenue source.
Who is your carrier, by the way?
Verizon.
Yeah, you have to subscribe to a tethering or hotspot feature now. It's an additional feature at an additional charge.
Except if you're on Verizon 4G.
I think Sprint 4G is the same thing, too.
I'm on Verizon 4G, and...
Well, here's the deal. Yes, they will charge you extra, except for Verizon, because the Supreme Court said, no, 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 no. We gave you public spectra for your 4G, which means people should be allowed to do this for free. So if you have Verizon 4G, you can do it for free. Now, free is a relative term. You still have to buy a piece of software that lets you do it. There is there. I think you need both pieces of software. There's a program called Foxfy.
Okay.
And there's another one called PDA Net Plus or PDA Plus Net. I forget which it is.
Okay.
And they're both made by the same company, and I think you need them both. And the PDA Plus Net is $7 or $8. And then you put your serial number into both products. I finally discovered. You have to. There's nowhere that tells you to do that, but I found a spot in both programs that let you put the.
That's your ESN.
Yeah, not password. Your
electronic serial number.
Yeah, your serial number.
Right.
And then you can get up to four connections simultaneously for as long as you want. Now you're still paying for data unless you've turned on wireless. Right.
But you don't need a tethering plan.
But you don't need a tethering plan of any sort.
Understand. Okay.
Now, every time somebody did this in the Apple iOS store, AT&T shut it off.
Right. There's nothing illegal about doing this. The big thing is the other end. If you don't have Verizon 4G, and Steve says it might also be Sprint, but if you don't have Verizon that I know of, 4G... if you have Verizon 4G, you are allowed to tether.
Okay, I do have a Verizon 4G. Now, what about the issue of not being able to hook the two devices together through Bluetooth? I've unpaired, repaired, and it just does nothing when I click on either device.
So you want to tether it for
Bluetooth file transfer?
For either file transfer or for data. Either way. But it does not connect through Bluetooth at all.
Yeah, each device has to have the right Bluetooth services enabled.
Were enabled before, but it seems like this year, I haven't done this since...
Did you do a carrier update on your phone?
I did not.
Okay. Because sometimes they remove those features until you pay for them extra.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have anything to say about Bluetooth. Which is an interesting question.
Right, and I'm not the only one that is experiencing this. My girlfriend, same devices, has the same problem. Can't connect through Bluetooth anymore, but we used to be able to.
Right, so you've got Bluetooth turned on both devices.
Correct.
Which version of Android do you have? It doesn't matter. What you need to do is go into your wireless and networks setting and look for tethering and portable hotspot.
Right.
In there, you should see Bluetooth tethering.
Yes.
And you set that up, and it still doesn't work.
It still doesn't work, no. But the thing is, even with Bluetooth, without the tethering, just trying to connect the two devices together, let's say to do a file transfer, they do not connect. Nothing happens when you click on connect to the Nexus 7 or connect to the Droid on either device.
All right, and so when you let's say you set that up on your Razer already.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go to the N7.
Yep.
In settings, and click on Bluetooth, not right. The toggle, just the word Bluetooth.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You click on the name of your phone, or you don't see the phone.
No, it's there, it's paired, but when I click on it, you would normally see it say connecting. It doesn't say anything.
All right, well, under profile, it says internet access, and you've got that checked.
Profile is where on the...
Same place, under paired Bluetooth device.
Right.
You'll see the name of it, and underneath that it should say unpair, and underneath that it should say profiles.
No, it says use for internet access, and that is...
It says internet access.
Profiles, I see that, yeah.
And that's checked.
You try to check it, and it doesn't do anything. It doesn't accept the check.
But you can definitely see the phone, and you see that you're paired to it.
Correct. Yeah, both devices are paired to each other, but nothing else.
I wonder if perhaps the Droid Razor, for some reason, doesn't do...
Which Razor is it? Just Razor, period?
Not sure.
Yeah, they make a bunch of different Razors. Yeah.
Droid Razor, that's all I could tell you.
Yeah, without knowing the model number.
Where would that be found?
Nowhere.
it would be said in about this phone.
About this phone, it might say it inside the battery bay. It usually says it, too.
There is no battery bay. You can't remove the battery on this.
Oh, great.
Yeah, a lot of them do that. I'm desperately looking stuff up because I don't own a Droid Razor myself, but
I know the Droid forums have a lot of information on stuff like this.
You might also want to look. You might also want to look at a program called Open Garden for Bluetooth.
Open Garden?
Open Garden.
Okay.
And it may be that Bluetooth. Yeah, no, that should work. I don't know what you're not seeing. And you should be able to connect this Foxfy thing via Bluetooth as well, by the way. But, you know, don't pay for... Well, you can get it for free, and you get 5 minutes of connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't hurt to try it.
Okay.
You know, PDA Net plus Foxfy.
Okay, I'll give those a try.
Because one of the... You can theoretically connect... Put that on your phone, and you can connect that using Bluetooth.
But if the devices aren't connecting through Bluetooth, though... then how can you connect to that?
Well, the theory is that try it. My point is that may allow you to make the kind of connection you want to make.
Understand. Okay.
Right? I mean, it certainly give it a try and see if you get the choice of internet connection.
Okay.
Because that's the of internet access. Because that's the only thing I can think of is that it may be that your phone... is not providing the right type of connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, because I know the Nexus 7 will do it. So my thought is the phone is not providing the right kind of connectivity by itself, but this PDA Net plus Foxfy might do the job.
Well, and at the Open Garden website, their screenshot shows a Nexus 7 and a Droid Razor and a MacBook Air using the Droid Razor for internet.
Yeah, so give that a shot. Well, take a look at that as well. Is that free or is that also a...
It was a free download, at least. I don't see a price on it yet.
So try that.
Okay.
It says open. That implies...
Yeah. open garden theoretically implies it's an open system, but it certainly can't hurt to try it because it's a free download. So how can you go wrong?
Okay, we'll give that a shot.
All right.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Let us know, by the way.
Yes.
Thanks.
They're hiring.
They're hiring. That's good to know. But yeah, part of the problem, of course, is the vast number of products that are out there now, and not necessarily all of them will connect in every way to everything. One of the reasons that I prefer the Nexus line of phones, because they are the pure... Android experience. There's been nothing added to them by the carrier or manufacturer, so that by the end of the deal, by the time you get everything hooked up, if it's going to work, it's going to work on a Nexus. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank every single one of you called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get call earlier next week is all I can tell you. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, for doing great work today. I'm Nick Francesco. I was here too. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites. And we are right here on the Truly Great. And let us never forget, solely member-supported, member-supported Jazz 90.1. George is coming in with the best German music you will hear all week. Linda Weilman will keep him on the straight and narrow so it's safe to listen. And we'll be back next week.